Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 26, delivered on December 7, 2017. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Tonight, review for the final exam. The final exam is 7 questions, and you answer 5 of them. Don't answer more than that. There would be no way for you to fix that mistake if you did it. Also, you will be graded very sharply on your spelling, complete sentences, no lists, no parentheses, none of that. Just write a 2-sentence, no more than 2-sentence answer for me, because that will be graded sharply. On one hand, it's a more difficult exam because it's comprehensive, but you've also seen some of the questions. 3 of the questions will be drawn from exams 1 and or 2. In other words, I'll just copy and paste. Maybe 2 from exam 1, 1 from exam 2, 3 from exam 2, none from exam 1. But you know the answers to those questions. You know those are coming at you. So just that way, I mean, you got a 60% right there. Just tell me what I told you the answer was. So that's going to help you out there right away. Just study those 2 exams. And in those exams, of course, and the question basis I gave you for exam 1 and exam 2, those question bases, I'm going to pull 2 or 3 additional questions from those. Okay? Probably about 2 from those question bases. 1 maybe from exam 1. Remember what I just went through and said, this, you should know this, you should know this, when we were doing the reviews for those exams. Right there you go. There's some more stuff for you. And I also might pull one question that I've asked you before from one of the exams, but I'll change it in some way. Maybe instead of interest rates rising, interest rates would fall, but it'd be the same fundamental concept set that you would have to know to answer it. Okay? And then there will be 1 question from the last 2 lectures on optimal capital structure and the weighted average cost of capital. That's the broad overview. 3 questions you've seen, and you've heard the exact right answer. Couple more, right off the questions that I gave you from exam 1, those questions during the reviews for exam 1 and exam 2. And then probably 1 would be a variation on a question I've asked you before. And then 1 new one from the optimal capital structure and weighted average cost of capital lectures. Now, as far as broad knowledge that you need, you need to understand, okay, this is a final. So, in other words, I'm hitting things that are objectives of the course, not superfluous things along the way, just main objectives of the course. So you know that it's going to be just the core important things. For example, know the capital asset pricing model. And quite importantly, I want you to know how we use it in practice. I might ask you, what are 2 ways the CAPM is used in real finance? Now remember, the capital asset pricing model calculates a return or an expected return. That's what's on the left side, the expected return is. Where do we use interest rates in finance? What do we use them for? What do we use? Why do we care about an expected return? Okay, you need to know that. Where else? Early in the course, I started out, I was pulling an interest rate out of thin air and using it to show you one of the basic things that we do in finance, find present values and future values. Okay, at first I was pulling that out of thin air, but then I even mentioned then, well, right now I'm pulling it out of my hat, and now later on I'll show you how we actually get those discount rates. So there you go. So make sure that you know the capital asset pricing model. Make sure you understand interest rates. What we mean by interest rates. What is an interest rate? What's inside of an interest rate? You see an interest rate on a loan. What are the things that make that interest rate what it is? That was early material. Back in the first lectures of the semester. I also emphasized the two different ways that a company can finance its operations, debt and equity. What is different about them fundamentally? As far as funding goes, as far as a corporation's decision-making goes, one of them's cheaper than the other. Why? At least at first it's cheaper. Late in the course, I showed you that that's not always the case. But in general, one of those ways of raising money is quite a bit cheaper than the other. Why is one cheaper than the other? There are two reasons. I went into the upside and the downside, and I even asked you about it on an exam. What's the upside of one of them? What's the downside of it? What's the upside of the other one? What's the downside of it? Make sure that you understand that fully. Okay. Along the way, I talked about things like liquidity. What do we mean by liquidity? There's a good side to liquidity, and then there's a bad side to liquidity. High liquidity has a good side, and high liquidity has a bad side. Okay. Find someone I haven't bothered in a while. Who ran away from me when I wanted someone for horse head duty? Madam, you have $1,000. Now, suppose you have all that $1,000 in your pocket. Does that mean you are highly liquid or very illiquid? If you have all that $1,000 in your pocket, highly liquid, good. Now, what's the upside of having all of that money in your pocket? What's the upside? And do what? Spend it. You can go to Burger King and get two double cheeseburgers, and when they tell you the bill, you can pull it right out of your pocket. Here. They'll back off. Whoa, highly liquid. Have you seen my car? It's all decked out for Christmas. It's got two sets of reindeer antlers. These people at Chick-fil-A, they came out and they wanted to do a selfie with in front of my stupid car. I was hungry. I wanted my sandwiches. What's the downside, though, of having all that $1,000 in your pocket? Well, yeah, there's that, but I mean, it's not like, well, yeah, we are in a high crime neighborhood. What's the big downside? You got one?
It's not making money for you.
Exactly. You see, because short term is not going to earn you hardly anything. I mean, if it's in your pocket, you're going to earn nothing from it. You have to put it into long term investments. In other words, you have to make it illiquid. You, madam, are highly illiquid. Did you know that? I mean, they say, yeah, you're 95% water. Well, have you ever tried to ring someone out and see if that's true? I don't think it is. I've tried it a couple of times. I didn't get that much water. I mean, before the person started fussing a lot. Okay, now, the point there I'm making, though, is that you're highly illiquid. However, you will earn a lot of money. What's your major? You will earn a lot of money in your life Because you're highly illiquid, but over a long period of time, that creates a lot of value in the future. So there's that upside and that downside, and I might probe that. I'm not saying I will, but I might probe that. So you understand that trade-off between liquidity and return on your assets. Another thing also, I want you to make sure you understand risk. In some way, I'm going to look for you to talk to me about risk. The two kinds of risk, obviously, that's one way of doing it. How do we measure risk? Now, there are informal measures of risk, but we're academics, so we have to have a number base. We need to quantify things. So we can't just talk about risk. Have you ever been to Disney? Okay. They have something there called the Tower of Terror. I went on it. It takes you up in this blackened way, and you just keep going and going in a completely blackened environment. And then they open the doors at the top when you get to the top. You know what I saw? The curvature of the earth. I saw dead relatives. That's right, fat boy, you join us now. And then they release you. And you go down, and they keep opening doors, and you keep. And I was having seizures, and then to end the insult, you're staggering out of there, and they got a big picture of you. They took a picture of you when you were. My chops were up here. Did I learn my lesson? No, I went on the slingshot. Oh wow, I mean, talk about a food clearing experience. Fortunately, I blacked out. They said I didn't. I was sounding like Scooby-Doo. Anyway, where was I? Try to stay on point, okay? real problems for real people. But, you know, there's risk there, but we can't quantify that. We're not saying, well, that had, you know, I suppose I could have put it on a hurl meter. I was up there. I'd pegged the meter at 10. Okay, but realistically, in finance and in accounting, we have to measure. We have to give numbers. We have to, in a sense, liquidate. And so in that spirit, how do we measure risk? There are two classic measures. One is more preferable in finance, but they're both there in finance. Okay, sir. I am Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know that thing? Well, Dr. Jekyll uses a scalpel. Well, we shall remove this small nodule from your neck. And then there's Mr. Hyde. He comes in with an axe. Okay. Right? Okay. So one of our classic measures is very blunt. It tells us an absolute total amount of volatility, a total amount of risk. And then there is one that is a finer division that tells us more about the kind of risk that we really want to know about. Because one part of risk we can get rid of. No one's going to reward us for that risk. So the blunt one tells us overall. And then there's a finer one that tells us more of what we need to know to proceed with investments. It's interesting, I saw an article over the years, and there's just a couple recent research papers, on how efficient are portfolios that individuals create for themselves. Doing studies of individuals, and do they make efficient portfolios? Is there a natural tendency to do it? Or do they create highly inefficient portfolios? Portfolios that carry unnecessary risk, that carry stupid risk. We find out that almost uniformly, these portfolios are stupidly over risky. They are highly inefficient. Oddly enough, some of these are actually portfolios that are partially managed by their employers, and they're very inefficient. They're not well diversified at all. And oddly enough, we're in a time like that right now. Everyone's a hero in an upsurging market like this.
Well, I invested in a stock in Robinhood, and I made a lot of money, so screw your finance theory. Well, what will happen is when the hurricane goes the other way, and it will within 36 months, it's going to drop like a rock. All of a sudden, those people will be eating cat food. Because they thought they were geniuses, but everyone's boat goes up when the tide's coming in. It's when the tide goes out that you have to worry about what's going to your portfolio. So in other words, the average person does not have any concept that risk is a controllable thing. Corporations these days, a popular major and a popular career choice right now is risk management. Have you ever heard of it? We actually have a risk management and insurance program here at this good university, and it's a place where now we understand you can't just sit there playing victim. You can control risk both in your business and in your investments. Show me that you know how that's done with your investments. And if you're more interested in how risk management is done, take some courses. We got some courses here. You can join the risk management and insurance program and find out. It's actually very interesting, all the different kinds of risk. But in finance, we have a particular kind of risk that we can get rid of. Most people don't do it. You should be able to do it from just taking this course from this fine professor. Ask me questions. You have anything you want to know about? Because at the end of this, I'm going to give you your student evaluations to do, and I'm going to leave, and then that'll be the last chance, unless you get to my office hours, for you to ask me questions. If you, yes. Oh, I'm glad you asked that. Thank you. You get your two note cards from the exams, and you can bring in a third one for the information that came after the last exam. So it's a total of three. I'm glad you asked that. I almost forgot to mention that. Yeah.
When is the final?
I think ours is 5:30 to 7:30 on Tuesday. Is that it? Yeah.
So now, 2 hours will be more than enough time for you to get the exam done and go back and just make sure that you don't lose any of my, I'm such a jerk about those spelling errors and all that. Just get them out of there and get a clean, straight answer. Because if you get the grammar and the spelling right, you've got 5 of 20 points. Each one is worth 20 points. So even if you blow the question, you've blown only 15 points. And so, and I hope you're not going to blow any of the questions. But Lord knows some people will try. Yes?
How are we going to know when you're going to drop the...
Oh, it's right after. You have to have everything finished by, what is it, like 11:30 p.m. on the 9th, right? I then, after that, see, I can't drop the lowest before that. A couple of semesters ago, I dropped at the midterm, I dropped the three lowest. And then when I did it at the end of the course, it dropped the three next lowest, too. So, boy, they got a bonus. That was really good. After the drop, you can do all your assignments late in this class. You just lose some points for doing it. But that all ends on the 9th. You've got until the 9th. And then anything that hasn't been done gets a zero. And then I drop the three lowest each of the online categories. But I can't do it until I've let everyone have their best shot at cleaning up anything that's behind. I mean, yeah.
So the grade that we have online now
is very conservative.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you've not done a few assignments. But if you go back and try to do them, if you've blown off something, go back and try, for heaven's sakes. But, yeah, I mean, what you see online is almost like a worst-case scenario, as long as you've been doing the assignments, at least some. And the truth be told, the final exam is very much bimodal. Most people do real well on it, but a lot of people don't. Now, here's one rule.
I was taught this rule when I first started teaching for the Department of Mathematics at The Ohio State University, lo, these 36 years ago. God, I never give more than one grade lower than what you get on your final exam. Okay? That's a rule they taught us. That was the Ohio State rule, and I've carried it with me every place I've taught since then. So that doesn't mean, well, I flunked everything, I'll just ace the final. No. But how many people does that benefit every semester? About, in a class of 200, about 20. I've had people who came back and gotten B's after when they were getting D's in the course, but they did excellently on the final. They got an A, so they got a B in the course, even though they would technically have gotten a C. So it will benefit you to spike this final as good as you can. Stay frosty, eat your Wheaties on Tuesday, and all of that. Any other questions you have before I give the evaluations out? And don't run out of here. Just do them. Just say he's a jerk, he's whatever. Just get to do the evals. Okay, now, I need some volunteers for doing these evaluations. Good. I'm going to have four of you. You're going to get up here and do this. And you two are going to be volunteers, too, to hand out evaluations. Don't forget to do your own. Let me write this on the board. The code that they want you to do, 548-240-00-0510. Now, before I do this, come to my office after this is over. You're part of my tribe now. I expect you to be showing up from time to time to let me know that you're doing okay, that you're eating properly, that you've got plenty of fiber in your diets and all of that. Other than that, that's all I have for you tonight and forever. Elvis has left the building.